Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. From Visalia with 9 years sober, and her favorite slogan is "Let go and let God." Let's give a hand of round applause to Luann.
Hi, thank you. A mic. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
I love that it's kind of unorganized and flying by our cuffs, because that's how I work best. So I've been sick for the past like 3 days, which has really been good because my head hasn't been like trying to rehearse what I'm going to say tonight at all. It's just been feeling really sorry for me. So if I sound sick, if I sound off, I have been, and that's my excuse. But my name is Luann, and I am an alcoholic. And by the grace of God, which is a total miracle, I have 9 years on May 14th. It's probably not, my kids aren't here so I can say this, it's probably my most proud thing that I've ever done in my life, because not only is it a gift that I've given to myself, but it is a gift that I've given to my family and my kids. And I don't take this thing lightly. It almost killed me. And it's really cool. I think everybody should celebrate every day. Even don't minimize any day that you have. 10 days is awesome. Because it's really hard to get here. When Bill asked me to speak, he gave me an invitation. And in the invitation, I'm kind of a literal person, and I read everything, and I'm a Virgo, and in my job, I like to love the steps, love details. So I read everything in there, and it said that the group conscience has talked about sticking to the steps. And I thought, you know, that's a really good idea, because I can talk a lot, and the last time I did this speaking gig, I looked up at the clock, and I had spoken for 45 minutes, and I hadn't even gotten sober. And to go on and on and on about the tragedy that binds us all is important, because I remember when I used to come, when I was a new newcomer to this program, I was really angry, really, really angry, and I'll get to that. But I would sit in these rooms. I didn't believe anybody. If anybody said they had longer than 30 days, I didn't believe it. It was something that completely didn't register in my head. I thought everybody was lying. And so the message of hope and the message that of recovery kind of went over my head, because I was still stuck in that place of being mad that I had to be here. That was kind of where I was when I first got sober. To be honest, I had no desire to be a part of any 12-step program. I was what you would call a functional alcoholic, and I don't really know what that means aside from the fact that I was able to hold a job. You know, function internally wasn't happening. I started drinking when I was 14. So for 20 years of my life, I drank like an alcoholic. And I can honestly say that there were periods where I was able to control my drinking. But for the majority of the time, any time I took a drink, I was the one that was sloppy. I was the one that had to be watched and had to have a chaperone. And I'm not going to lie, though, I had a lot of fun drinking. I wouldn't have let it go as far as I did unless drinking had some good sides to it. And when I first started drinking, it was fun. I went out. It was a social thing. It had me, like, you know, let my inhibitions down. I was able to talk to people I wouldn't normally talk to. I was able to have fun the way I thought I couldn't have fun unless I was drinking. So what I'm going to do, I'm weaving my story around the 12 steps. Because for me, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are magical. And I don't say that lightly. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous did for me what I could never do for myself. And I tried. I tried so hard to drink like a normal person, and that was my problem. Because when I was going through, when it started to turn, I'll go back a little bit, when it started to turn and it wasn't fun anymore, I had moved out of the state to Utah. And that's where my alcoholism actually really got root, which is in a dry state, which is kind of funny. But I had the plan. You know, it went from being, alcohol was pretty available to me up until the time I moved. When I moved to Utah, I had to actually plan out how I was going to make sure that my closet had enough alcohol for me. They were closed in the evenings. They didn't sell it at the grocery store. And it was still a fun thing for me to kind of, you know, look in the cabinet and see what I had, finish off a few bottles, get a few more. But at that, I didn't realize that at that time, that was when my disease was taking the party and turning it into my nightmare. Because I didn't drink like a normal person at that time. You know, normal for me was always staying with the party people because they kind of drank like I did, and so we can all have fun, and I would kind of blend in, even though I was the one in the corner throwing up or I was the one wandering around. I don't know. I decided that taking walks in the middle of a blackout was the best option for me. So I would wake up in strange parts of Pleasanton where I'm from, asleep in weird places. I always blacked out. That was the norm for me, so I didn't really know anything else. I didn't really know that was maybe odd. So for me, blacking out wasn't that big of a deal. But in Utah, it started becoming my primary way of dealing with everything. And that's when I can honestly say that alcohol started to take me away from me, if that makes sense. I didn't learn how to do anything sober, and I mean that like honestly. I didn't do anything sober, and the worst thing for me was being alone. I didn't know how to be by myself sober. I had never learned how to be happy sober or sad sober. Drinking was a part of every emotion. It was a part of every decision. It was a part of every solution. That was how I solved my problems. And so as life, you know, we get older, we grow up, and life gives us curveballs and things that we have to get through, it was always alcohol. It was never any kind of healthy way of dealing with anything. It was shut out, tune out, and get drunk and black out. So when I'm working on my first step with my sponsor, admitting that I was powerless over alcohol wasn't that easy for me, because even though I could see the nightmare that my life had become, because by the time I was done drinking, which was 20 years of drinking, when I was 35, I finally looked at my life and realized I was dying. I mean, that's not an exaggeration. The amount of alcohol I was consuming at that point was equivalent to 3 bottles of wine a night, and I was blacking out every single night. This is to qualify myself so that you really get it. I am truly an alcoholic. For 3 years of my life, I don't remember much at all, and that's not much of an exaggeration. I held my job. I did the responsibilities as a mom to the best of my ability, but at about 7:30 every night, I blacked out. I don't know what happened. I'll get a little weepy because the biggest thing is that I don't know what I did with my kids. You know, like I would read them stories. I don't know. They would tell me that I was slurring. They would tell me the things that I didn't want to ask, you know. The shame in my kids' eyes the next day, the fear. They didn't know what it was, but they just thought mom just was tired. And I missed out on those years. I missed out on a lot of my kids' years, and that's time I can never, ever get back. And I've made peace with that through the steps of the program, but God, if I can go back, you know, if I could go back and get some of that time back, I would. It's just not what God had planned for me. So even though for 3 years of my life I was in a blackout, for most of the day, when I was working, I was okay. But the minute I got home, I started drinking. And the insanity would start back up again the next morning, because every morning I would wake up from a blackout, go to work at a really funky hour of the night, and then go back home and pour out all my alcohol. Every day for 3 years, I'd pour out all the alcohol. I don't even know how much money I spent on alcohol in that time, because it was a lot that I would pour out, because I had to stock up. But I would pour it all out and vow every single day, every single morning, that I wasn't going to do this again. And every day after work, I would find a reason to go to the grocery store. And my mind, you know, I joke, and people who know me have heard me talk about Luann Land, but it's a real thing. In Luann Land, that wasn't a problem. In Luann Land, I could always justify why I needed to go to the grocery store. And it would to get, you know, get a few stupid things that I didn't need at all. But it was always to get a few bottles of wine, or it ended up being a box of wine at the end. And then it would start me on that roller coaster again. But because I held a job and was functional, whatever that means, it put me on this alcoholic path for a long time. And so admitting that I was powerless over it with my sponsor took a while. It took a lot of writing. It took a lot of introspection and to realize that I had no idea who I was. And that's very honest. taking alcohol out of my life was one of the scariest things that I could have ever done, because since the age of 14, that was how I dealt with everything. And so to say I can't drink at all anymore, first of all, I thought you all were lying. I thought surely you drank on New Year's or on your birthday or whatever. But I thought I could minimize, I thought I could just try to control it like everybody does. But it was very, very scary for me to think that I had to live the rest of my life. The one day at a time thing didn't register for me in the beginning. This game was up. That the way I was living for the majority of my life was killing me, and I had to stop. But luckily, I had a sponsor who didn't let me minimize anything. I stayed on step one for a good amount of time. I can't remember how long, but I had to get really real with the fact that my life had become unmanageable, and that I was powerless over this thing of drinking. And I'm really glad that she had me spend that time on step one, because my thinking will always, it still does it, 9 years sober, I will still kind of think, maybe I could just have a drink. And I'm so afraid of this alcoholism thing that luckily I shut myself down pretty quick when that thought comes up. But I'm not going to lie, it still does. I am an alcoholic. I will always be an alcoholic. And if I don't remember step one, if I don't go back to how unmanageable and how powerless I am over this crazy, crazy thing of alcohol, I'll easily flip back. My Luann-Luann thinking can justify a lot, and it's never in my best interest. And it's a good thing to know. So when we started working on step two, this is where my anger really came into play, and it continues on. Where I was 9 years ago is nowhere compared to where I am now. And believe it or not, I was a very angry, angry person. I was most angry at God. I never lost, I don't want to be preachy, so forgive me if I rub anybody the wrong way, but for me and my path in this program, to take away the spiritual aspect of it would be to take away the power in the steps. So whatever your idea of your higher power is, embrace it, because that is what has given me the trust to let go, the faith to let go on a daily basis of what I think might be right for me, what I think might be right for my kids. And because this program allowed me to wrap my head around a God that works in my life was the permission that I needed to make this program work. So the coming to believe in a power wasn't so much that I ever thought there wasn't a power greater than myself, but I was really mad at God. I was really, really mad at God. In fact, I go back to my old writings and things before I got sober, and I had a huge faith in a higher power. And I knew that this higher power could make me drink like a normal person, but that was the problem. I wasn't praying to be sober. I never prayed to be sober. I prayed so that I can drink like that person who can go to a bar and have two glasses of wine and even leave half a bottle of wine on the table. I still have trouble with that. I still go to a restaurant right now and look at people who can walk away from a pitcher of beer and from a half a glass of wine. And my disease still wants to go. You didn't finish that. Are you going to finish that? Because I want to finish that. If you don't want to finish that. So I'm really happy for that, because it reminds me that I can't be lazy. I can't let my guard down with this disease. But getting through the anger and having the permission to make my, to expand or rearrange or whatever my idea of a higher power so that it worked for me. At first it was these rooms. At first it was you people, because the God that I believed in when I came here didn't work for me the way I wanted him to work. I had a little list of things that I wanted him to do, and it wasn't working. So I was pissed and like, whatever, I'm not dealing with that God. So it was, when I first came here, the spiritual nature of this program was looking at all of the people that had come before me, because I honestly didn't believe, it was miraculous to me that somebody could get through 30 days without drinking any alcohol, like any at all. So when I would go to meetings and see people who had years, I didn't believe that whatsoever. So that's probably, gosh, you know, all these steps are so amazing, but the step two gave me a God that works in my life. And I can't minimize how important that is to working this program. And it can be anything. Just have faith in something other than your own thinking. Because if you're like me, your thinking is not out for your best interest. And it was because of step two that I was able to give up and let go. And when I told Jennifer that let go and let God is my favorite, there's so many favorite things that used to irritate the heck out of me when I came here, just to let you know. If anyone in here is really irritated by the rogue things that people say here, I was there. I was totally been there when people would say that. Because that didn't work for me. I didn't know what that meant. When I first got here, I'm so thankful that these steps are in this order, because when I first got here, I couldn't wrap myself around doing step 9 ever. That wasn't ever something. In fact, I remember Boo, who was supposed to speak here tonight, was my first sponsor. And I remember telling her that, oh, I don't have to do step 9. We're going to skip over 4 and 9. We're just not going to do that. Because I'm Luann. But getting through step 2 so that I can surrender to my higher power and let go of my idea of what I thought my life should be was very huge for me. And step 1, 2, and 3 is what connected me to this program. And then I was able to grow from there. It gave me the foundation that set me on a path to happiness that is really what I would rather focus on. Because it's there for everybody that's in this room. You know, everybody in this room, we are all united by the same disease. I know we have all had the same exact thoughts. And the same committee in our heads that tells us we know we shouldn't drink, but we really want to drink, and maybe just this one. And we've all had those same exact thoughts. And so if I can do it, after trying my best for 3 years, in the end when it was really, I mean, I drank for 20, but when it was really, really destructive, that's what I would like to impart upon everybody here, because we're all on the same path. Some do it faster, some do it slower, some do it messier, and that's okay. As long as we're putting one step in front of the other, that's okay. My 9 years doesn't mean anything if I drink tonight. You know, we all have today. That's all we have. So it doesn't mean, to me, it doesn't, it's an ego check for me not to say that I have 9 years, but I'm really excited about it, so I'm going to anyway. Step 4 for me is where I had to get real with my fear and anger. My fear and my anger in step 1, 2, and 3 was still very much there. I was very angry. And when I go back into my writing, I could probably read pages 66 through 68 if anybody that I've sponsored is here. Those are my pages. If I open my book, it falls to page 66 through 68. I was angry. And I was angry that this program was telling me I couldn't be angry. That's how angry I was. I'm like, what do you mean I can't be angry? So it took a long time for me to work through how angry I was that I had to get sober, how angry I was that I couldn't drink like normal people. How angry I was at everything. You know, I was angry that I was the breadwinner in my family. I was angry, I'll admit it, I was angry that I was a mother. These things in my life, how self-centered that I was at that time when I was doing that step, is amazing to me. Because anything that prevented me from drinking the way I wanted to drink angered me. And I didn't understand why that was a problem, because I was able to support the family, blah, blah, blah. That was how I justified my drinking and my anger. I felt justified in being angry. Now, to me right now, where I'm at after working these steps, it's just so insane to think that, because anger doesn't do anything to anybody else. All it does is hurt me. That's it. And I would hold on to that anger like I was doing somebody else, you know, like I was sticking it to them. But they didn't care at all that I was angry at them. All it was a daily struggle for me to justify that anger. It was a daily, like what I did was to support how angry I was and to go through, instead of doing an inventory of my part on anything, I did an inventory on everybody else's part and why they made me angry and why I should be angry. And it was like just, it was sadist. It was so ridiculous, but it's what I did. And so having to let go, I admitted that I had to let go of alcohol. And when I started to get to the part where I had to admit that I had to let go of anger, that was a hard one for me. And when I, you know, it said that it was the dubious luxury of other people, I'm like, well, they already get to drink. but I didn't know what else to do. I had given up my alcohol. I didn't have any other options. I did not know how to live. And so I put my trust in my sponsor, who was so very patient with me, and she never let me get away with anything. She never let me table something and get back to it. We stayed on a step until I was ready to move on. And so I don't know how long I stayed on step 4. When I realized that my anger was completely tied into my fear, that was a huge epiphany for me. Everything that I was angry about was could be boiled down to something that I was afraid of, something I was afraid I wasn't getting. I was afraid of what people were thinking about me. I was afraid of trusting that things would work out. I guess I'm a control freak. I think a lot of alcoholics are. And it's hard for me, even though the choices that I'm making are pretty destructive, it's still hard for me to let go of that control. Because to let go of the control, you have to trust that it's going to happen, whatever. But if you have control, even though you have a bad outcome, you can kind of know that. It's like wrapping yourself in a blanket of pity. It's familiar, and you don't have to step out into anything new and leap out and tackle your fear. But getting through my fear was the only way to get over my anger. Because when I made the inventory of all the things I was afraid of, and my sponsor had me make an inventory of everything, including spiders, which I'm very afraid of, all the way to like the fears that I have of dying, you know, and the list was pages and pages and pages long. So when I went through and was going through the steps and going through my fifth step with her and telling her all those fears, it was insane to actually hear it coming out of my mouth. And I didn't want to do step five. You know, I didn't want to tell my sponsor about all these deep, dark secrets. I was very thorough when I did my fourth step on paper. And I wrote it all out on paper. But I didn't want to share it with her at all because my ego was still in the mix and didn't want to admit to another person all these fears that I had, because that would admit that the anger is not justified. You can't be an angry, scaredy cat, but that's what it is. Brave front. So, but my sponsor had me sit down and do a step five. And, you know, I can't, every step in this program is it's divinely orchestrated. And they're all in order for a reason. I could have never done step four had I not done one, two, and three and come to the place that I was to be able to work through an inventory of all of the stuff that I had to go through. And without knowing my part in all of this stuff, strangely enough, it's comforting to know that I played such a huge part in my misery, because then I can fix it, if that makes sense. You know, if I was blaming it on everybody else, then it's completely out of my control and I don't have anything that I can do about it. But doing these steps, admitting my part, telling my sponsor about that, actually was such a comfort for me. It put it into a much smaller, it made it manageable, you know, whereas out there in my head, my crazy, crazy head, it was just this huge mountain of fear, anger, things that I had done wrong, people that I had hurt. It was too much to think about. But really, when we sat down, it was a half a day. You know, my fifth step with her was a half a day. But it took the boogeyman, if that makes sense, out of all that I had thought in my head was a mess. It was a mess, don't get me wrong. But it's not as scary as I thought it was, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And so being willing and having humility are steps six and seven. And humility for me wasn't something I thought was going to be a problem, but wow, was it ever. You know, my sponsor had me do this little thing that I had to do three acts of kindness, random acts of kindness. But I couldn't tell anybody, and I had to do like 12 because I couldn't get past. I had told people all the time, left and right. I wanted to take credit. It's an amazing experiment, and if you haven't done that, you know, I'm just suggesting that it was an eye-opener for me to see that my ego wanted to take credit no matter what. And so it's good. I did 12 nice things for people, but it took me that many times to actually get to three where I didn't even tell her. My ego was closely tied in to everything else, you know, because that's what controlled everything. That's what justified this insane behavior, this destructive pattern that shattered my family, that disappointed everybody, that, oh my gosh, the embarrassing. I don't think I need to tell you all the embarrassing things, but I have been to concerts where I've wet my pants. I have barfed in front of more people than I ever want to know. Luckily, I'll never meet them again. Maybe. God has a strange way of bringing people back into your life. I'll get to that. But I did all that. You know, I did all the humiliating things that I can look back on now and think, wow, because that's another person. I'm not that person anymore, thank God. It's all because of these steps. But, I had blackouts where I still, to this day, like I think about 4 or 5 months ago, I had a friend that I hadn't seen in a long time. We were at the beach, and she was telling me a story. I don't remember any of it. Like the whole night, I don't remember anything that I did. And that's scary to know that a good portion of my life is gone for good. It's gone. But it's not anymore. You know, this program has given me the power to live my life to the fullest. Step 8 and 9, I didn't want to do it all, because it was one thing for me to admit to myself and to my sponsor the things that I had done wrong and the harm that I had done, to apologize, really put into action the ego deflation that you have to do when you're working a good step 7. And so I wrote it all down, and I saw all the harm that I had done, and I didn't want to do step 9. I didn't want to do step 9. I wanted to sweep it under the carpet. I wanted to just, let's just acknowledge that I'm doing better and move on. But and I wouldn't have been ready to do step 9. Had I not done steps 1 through 8, there's no way I would have been ready to do step 9, because the fear was gone. Step 9, when I was at step 1, if this makes sense, was completely, I wasn't going to do that. I wasn't going to apologize to all these people, more because it was so embarrassing. You know, that was the biggest reason, because I was so embarrassed by what I had done. But I had gotten to a point of such complete demoralization that I was willing to do whatever my sponsor told me to do. And that was a good place for me to be. So I started with, you know, I did the list, and I started with the people that I knew loved me no matter what. And that gave me the strength and courage to get through them all. And I have a funny story about doing my amends. Every single one of them was never, ever as scary as I had it in my head. Like I said, my thinking is always out for not my best. And I had it in my head. I play everything out in Luann Land, and I course out every option that somebody could say and have a resolution to everything that they would say. Not one of them went the way I thought. I thought I would experience some shaming, and not one of them were like that. And I hope that is the case with everybody here, but it's not going to be. It's just that generally my fears are bigger than the reality. But one of my amends that I had to do was when I was at a corporate function in Texas, they would have open bars. And for me, in my alcoholism, that was like right on. I'm going to take down. I'm going to get all the overtime you never paid me. I am going to make sure that I get compensated in the amount of drinks I'm going to drink. And so I made a complete fool of myself. Complete fool of myself. And the next morning somebody asked me if I knew what I had done with John, who was the owner of the company. And it was a nationwide company. And I don't know what I did with John. It was another one of those things where I don't want to know what I did with John. And to this day, I don't know what I did with John. But I knew it was embarrassing. I knew that I didn't want to talk about it. That was basically what it was. And when I was in line at the buffet, one of the CEOs, I don't know, there's so many labels, one of the big wigs, came up behind me and he gently just said, "Is there anything that I can do for you?" And those words right there, I knew he knew I was an alcoholic. I knew it. But his compassion, the way he said it, was like, you know, like the tone was like, "You need help." And so that was like, I don't know, 6 years before I got sober. Go through many jobs since then, different things happened, and I was going through my amends, and he was on the amends, because I knew I had done damage at that corporate function. And so his name was Jim, and I knew that I needed to make amends to him. But, you know, like, he was on my list, and I talked to my sponsor about it, but he's in Dallas. I'm never going to cross paths with him. Oh, my gosh. I was applying for a new job here in Visalia, and the corporate offices were in Texas. And they said to me, okay, Jim's going to call you. And I'm like, Jim who? Jim McMahon. I'm like, oh, this is the guy. This is the guy from that conference. But the way it played out is I knew what I had to do. I didn't think it was about the job at all. I thought, no, this is God putting this guy in my path so that I have to do the amends for this. I had no hope of getting the job at all. I really just thought I was supposed to do my amends to this person. I really swept under the carpet. But so I called him up before the interview, a phone interview, and I said, you know, I came clean with what I needed to tell him and apologized for the embarrassment that I made of that evening. And he sat for 30 seconds. That was a long 30 seconds. And I thought, well, at least he can't hit me. He's in Texas. And he said to me, that was the classiest thing anybody has ever done, and you have the job. And that, among so many things, that's just a tangible example of what this program, if you will work it, if you will work it, if you will not let go of the hope that are in these steps, I guarantee you, you're going to have blessings similar to that. It's, your higher power wants you to work these steps. That's why you're an alcoholic. I believe that being an alcoholic is one of my life's biggest blessings, because I would never work these steps on my own. If I didn't have a reason that was life or death to work these steps, there's no way I want to admit my part in things. There's no way I want to be rigorously honest. There's no way that I want to say sorry when somebody's being a jerk. That's the hardest, still to this day. The hardest thing for me to do is to be the biggest person in the face of somebody who's being such a jerk. And I do it, though. And it's all from working these steps and the experiences that I have had in being the bigger person, being the sober person. I know that that's just right. And it doesn't matter that that other person has all this other karma that he's got to deal with. I was wrong. It just happened to me today. I was wrong. I took the wrong tone. It was 6 o'clock in the morning, and I sent an email in one of the literatures. One of my favorite things. This is actually one of my favorite things in AA literature. It applies to me so much. It's in, I think, as Bill sees it, and it says, nothing pays off like the restraint of pen and tongue. And I will add email to that. because if I can just simmer down and not hit send on a few emails, it will really save amends later on. But I do those amends. I mean, the fact that I hit send when I shouldn't is, you know, that's something I have to contend with. But the way I deal with that is by apologizing. Knowing when I was wrong, no matter what that other person did, knowing I was wrong, and I'm keeping my side of the street clean, because when I go to bed at night, I sleep really soundly. Okay, moving on. So doing your amends is amazing, and it's a huge blessing. And if anybody who has been sober for any length of time has not done a thorough set of your amends, I highly recommend it. It's so life-changing, and you establish relationships with people that, like you've never had before. So that's been my experience. Step 10 is how I stay sober. Step 10 happens either nightly or during the day. Whenever, it says in the literature, whenever there's something wrong, when I am not comfortable with anything, there's something wrong with me. I have done something that's outside of what is in my best interest. And I'm selfish about my serenity now, and I can be that way. You know, I have aligned my will, hopefully as much as I can, to that of my higher power, and it makes me want that more. Because I get to be happy when I make the choices daily to walk a clean side of my street. And the joy that I get from that far outweighs the discomfort of doing what I need to do to get to that place. I never had peace before. I wouldn't sleep on many, many nights. And when I first got sober, I didn't sleep at all, because that's how I went to sleep, was to drink myself to sleep. So for the first 2 weeks, I don't think I slept at all. I was doing manic things all during the night. And when I look at it now, I am the best sleeper ever. My head hits the pillow and I'm out. And that wasn't me, you know, 9 years ago. And I still, like, everything I attribute to this program. But taking a personal inventory is so vital, and it's so easy to not do. But if I don't do that, then I start to, Luann starts to open up back into bad behaviors again easily. Too easily, and I can't let up on that. And when I'm off track, when I'm angry, you know, God has put me in this lovely, beautiful, fantastic relationship. But the thing about a relationship is that it really puts a mirror up to you on where you're failing, you know, because when you're alone, you can really think you're doing great. But when you're in a relationship where you really care about that person's feelings, you have to, you know, Luann can't really be a dictatorship. So I'm so thankful that I can be angry and then think, oh my God, that was all me. That was me. It wasn't even him. That was me. And that gives me that control back, though. And I like that. You know, when I know that it was me, I can let it go and the next morning be fine. When I'm constantly blaming other people, I can't expect them to come and apologize to me, or else I'll be spending decades being angry at this person and letting it be toxic to me. So taking a personal inventory every day, every time you're upset, is so important. And once you get into that habit, it's just, it comes so naturally, and it flows freely. And, you look at other people and you're like, dude, just admit you're part in it. But I don't say that in my head. Step 11 is my favorite step. If anybody knows anything about my story, I hated meditation. Prayer I had, you know, I was really good about making a list to God of what I wanted and what needed to be done and all these things. I was very good about asking for things. I still am. I wasn't good about listening, and that's true in relationships and in everything. I am not a good listener. I am a really good talker. And so the prayer thing I got down, you know, when my sponsor was talking about that, then she got to meditation. And I swear we stayed on meditation for like 6 to 8 months. And I hated it. And I could not turn my head off. And I'm not as good of a sponsor as my sponsor was, because again, she wouldn't let me. She had me doing all kinds of crazy things for this meditation thing. And I would go home and be like, oh my gosh, I got to do a mantra? What is that? And but in the, you know, prior 10 steps, she never led me wrong. And so I made a commitment to do everything that she said until I finished these steps, you know. And so I continued on. And there was a day, I won't go into it too much because I'm actually running out of time, but there was a day when it clicked and I could actually turn my head off. And oh my God, I can't even begin to tell you how amazing that is. And it's not any weirdness. It's just being quiet. You know, I had a meditation meeting at my house for a long time until I moved. And because I want to share this practice with people, because it's not like, you know, this free-spirited hokey-pokey stuff. It's just listening. And you can't listen when you're in your head going off on the lists of things to do and all these things. And when I am quiet and I finally got to that place where I can really hear my higher power telling me what direction to go in. And it sounds crazy, and you can feel free to consider that crazy. I'm just telling you, that's how I know. When I can shut up... it took a long time to learn how to shut up. I'm still not good at it, but it's the way that I am able to get guidance that I'm confident in, guidance that's custom made for me. Because guidance, you know, we are all here, in my opinion, we're all here to be our unique selves. And what works for some people is awesome. It might not work for other people. And for me, this program connected me to a higher power that works for me, that I feel so right about the direction that I'm going in. And that is something I never felt before coming to this program. I was always lost. I always doubted everything. And I was always afraid of what tomorrow was going to bring. And this program, the spiritual aspect of this program, I honestly, to the point where sometimes I feel like I lack empathy. Because whatever God has planned for me, for you, if it's uncomfortable, if it's ugly, it's okay. Because there's a lesson that you need to learn in that. There's a lesson that I need to learn in that. And it takes away the pain. Alcoholism kicked my butt. And I was an angry, hateful, sad shell of a human being when I came to this program. And to be given the confidence in knowing that I have a unique contribution, just like everybody else here has, it's a gift that I can't give to you. You just have to trust that these steps, if you work them thoroughly, will get you to that point. And it's my hope for everybody here that you do. Because having had a spiritual awakening, ooh, I'm tying this up all perfect. No, sorry. back to step 5. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, there's no way that I can ever explain to you, because it's a personal thing. But... oh, I didn't want to cry. To be at a place of complete despair, I still remember it, you know? I still remember hating people being happy. And I'm sure I piss people off all the time because I am so happy. And it doesn't mean that life sends me joy and sparkles and rainbows all the time. It means that I know how to deal with it. I have been given a way to deal with the shit. Oh, sorry. to deal with the lessons. I don't even want to call them that. They're not problems. They're not road bumps. They're lessons that you need to learn. And we're pigheaded and we're stubborn. And the lessons get harder the more you resist them. And that's my biggest thing is I want to get past the lesson as quickly as possible. If it's grief, I want to get through that grief as fast as I can. If it's anger, I want to get to the other side of it as fast as I can. And I have a choice in that matter, because these steps are perfectly laid out to deal with any problem that you have. and make life a joyous experience for you, no matter what. You know, if you lost a job, if I lose my job, I know that God has something planned for me. It's okay. Everything is okay. And when I was drinking, nothing was okay. Everything was scary. Nothing was working out the way I wanted to. But that's because I had my plan on how it all needed to go. And when I can let go and let that plan unravel the way God has it planned, I'm just telling you, it's a very peaceful and it's a very happy path. And I'm not better than anybody else at all in this program. I'm only one drink away from step one again. But if I can do it, I know everybody here can have that peace and joy, because it's right here. Just do your first set of steps. Get a sponsor who will not let you get away with stuff. And I guess that's all I have.
Good luck.